Real estate-based law firm attorney Kelly Richardson, co-founder and partner of Richardson Ober, is general counsel for Six Association of Realtors in Southern California. They do a lot of homeowners association, known as HOAs. He's had a column, HOA column, appearing in the Santa Barbara News Press. Now, I don't know, we got a new Santa Barbara News Press. I don't know if he's going to jump back in that one. He's based in Pasadena, but his quote is, "Sometimes I never see my clients and never visit the property, do consultations all over the state." And he's not seeing me now. He has done fair housing educational webinars for real estate brokers, and he's been nice enough to talk with me since 2021. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Kelly Richardson.
Thanks so much, Mark. And yes, I'd love to return to the news press. I'm happy to hear it's back operating.
Right. Well, there's a few local things. I'll send you the email of the new electronic version. I know I got confused because I was thinking that you now have some associations, HOA associations, as clients in Santa Barbara. Is that right?
Yes. I maybe 8, 10, something like that throughout Santa Barbara and Goleta.
They consult with you. Do you attribute that to being on Radio Real Estate since 2021?
I'm sure that helped.
So the law firm Richardson Ober, how come you got your name first?
Well, actually, I founded the firm with a law school classmate back in 1994. Mr. Ober joined me about 25 years ago, and my other partner retired. So, I was first in the door, I guess.
You were first with the other partner as well, first name?
You know, a funny story. My original partner is a very dear attorney named Steve Harmon. And when our first office suite was rented, the two offices that we rented were very unequal in size. And so I looked at Steve and said, "You want the bigger office or you want your name to go first?" And he said, "Oh, I'll take the bigger office." So that's how it became Richardson first. A true story.
That's funny. I love that. So the Homeowners Association, where are we at? There's a proposal to cap monthly condo association fee, SB 1007, and to curb how much associations can increase member dues. And, you know, it's funny. There's this, not a battle, but there's always this separation from the association, the board, and the members, but they're kind of on the same team. It's always kind of struck me. What's going on with this bill?
Well, Mark, that's a really great point, because that is a huge undercurrent that is very destructive in our state in terms of us versus them. And when you're in a common interest development, there is no them. There's only us. And when you and I in an individual home, when we have an unanticipated expense that comes up, we don't complain to ourselves. Well, we figure out a way to take care of it. We borrow money, we reallocate resources, and we fix our home. But for some reason, in a homeowner association where you have 3, 5, or 7 people making the decisions for everybody, all of a sudden now people don't seem to understand we're still talking about fixing our homes. And so that really, I think, is the genesis of Senate Bill 1007, is this notion that, oh, well, this association is disconnected or disassociated from me, the individual homeowner, and so I need to control them somehow. And the Senate Bill 1007 in its original form was, in my view, truly horrific, because it originally proposed to not allow boards of directors to increase the association's budget or assessments beyond the rate of inflation without a vote of the entire community. So can you imagine any time a significant expense happened in a year that the board didn't count on, they would be required, unless the expense was truly a trivial increase, they'd be required to get a homeowner vote every year to have their budget match their actual expenses.
So are they saying that an increase could be allowed, but it just couldn't be dictated by the board? It would have to be a vote, a majority vote.
Right. And that majority vote in almost every association I know would require at least a quorum, typically half or half plus one of the entire community participating. Well, my goodness, we can't get homeowners to just participate to vote who's going to be on the board, let alone amend governing documents or approve major assessment increases. It's really hard to get people to participate. So imagine you're on the board. You're legally obligated to take care of the association's actually anticipated expenses each year, and then you have a law that says, well, you can't do it. You can't do it unless you get a majority of a quorum of your entire association, which could be 10 people, it could be 1,500 people, to approve it. Good luck.
Now, you said the original initial iteration of the bill required that, and it changed?
Yes, it changed. Now it went from horrific to just really bad. The bill was amended. It passed the Senate on a pretty divided vote. Let's see, I think it was May. It passed on a 24-13 vote, which is pretty divided, and went to the Assembly. And in I believe June of this year, the bill was amended to change it from rate of inflation cap to 8% per year cap. So, Mark, imagine if you said to your significant other, well, dear, you know what? I'm just telling you right now that our household expenses cannot increase by more than 8% next year. Because that's what this bill would require boards to say to their communities, that we're not going to have increases more than 8% in any given year. Otherwise, again, we're back to a homeowner membership vote.
If it needs to go over that. My guest, real estate based law firm attorney Kelly Richardson, founding partner of Richardson Ober, based out of Pasadena, but does work right here in Santa Barbara, all over the state. Is there anything connected to what do you call it when the association has a reserves? What if they have, is there anything connected if they have reserves above or below a certain amount? Is that connected in any way?
It could be. It could be. When an association has a major repair and it turns out the reserves don't have quite enough money to cover the replacement of roofs or repaving of parking lots or whatever the expense may be, the association typically would do a significant either special assessment or increase the annual budget to make sure that they're popping enough money into the reserve account. This 8% cap would, among other things, make it much more difficult for an association board to make meaningful adjustments for those types of considerations. Imagine, was it 5, 6 years ago, we had a terrible run-up in property insurance for HOAs across the state. We had associations having to increase their premiums by double or triple. How would they have handled that if they were forced to choose in 2027 between not having insurance at all or somehow convincing the community to approve an increase in the budget beyond 8%?
We're talking about Senate Bill 1007. The current draft looks like they would cap 8%. Now, this is not related to special assessment. This means they can't raise the association fee by more than 8%.
Correct. The overall budget.
And do you think that this might, when an association might have gone a year without raising the fee at all, are they going to now feel obligated to raise it 8% all the time so they can build up more reserves?
I could see that as one workaround. It's kind of like landlords in rent control areas, where the common wisdom now, if you're subject to rent control, is you make sure that you do the maximum rent increase you're allowed to each year, whether or not you need to, because you just have to preserve the right to increase your rent. Well, I think that's what associations would do if this became law, is they would automatically build in an 8% increase every year to try to make sure that they had some financial flexibility for the surprises that happen in home ownership.
What is the current rule, and how will this affect it in terms of special assessments? What is there a rule now that caps special assessments?
There are two kinds of special assessments recognized by the Davis-Sterling Act. One is an ordinary special assessment approved by the board of directors in an open board meeting. That is capped at 5% of the association's annual gross expenses. So it can be significant in a larger association, but in small to mid-size, that often is not very much money. But that can be done on a board vote. If there are circumstances that qualify as an emergency special assessment, then the board can adopt a written resolution disclosing why the expense couldn't have been anticipated in the last budget preparation, or explain to the members that this is a current life safety hazard that we're dealing with, or disclosing to the homeowners that this particular expense was ordered by a judge in Superior Court. Then that assessment could be more than 5%, could be passed by the board, and take care of that financial emergency. Frankly, a lot of my associations during the insurance run-up crisis, that's what they were forced to do, is to go ahead and declare an emergency. Like the one association in Los Angeles County about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, had a $500,000 increase over the prior year in their property insurance just to insure all the condos in their property. So yeah, that wound up being an emergency special assessment to make sure that everybody's homes were protected.
$500,000? How many
Yeah.
units?
It was a larger property. It was several hundred units, but it was really painful for all those homeowners, but they had no choice. They couldn't lose their fire insurance and jeopardize their mortgages.
Well, as your analogy came up, as if you're a homeowner and you have a household and your homeowner's insurance goes up, you need to find the money, dip in, do something. You got to pay it. It is funny. We started the conversation. My guest, attorney Kelly Richardson, a part of law firm Richardson Ober, and actually servicing Santa Barbara, or I shouldn't say servicing, but consulting Santa Barbara HOA associations, but throughout California, started the conversation with, us versus them. Do you feel, well, first of all, is this bill going to pass?
I right now I don't think so. The bill passed the assembly, as I mentioned, in May, went to the state Senate, and its first committee hearing was canceled in late June, and there is no new date set. So the bill may now be dead. I think I didn't check the legislative calendar, but there's going to be a point pretty soon where it will be dead for this year. And then the author will have to decide, do they keep working on it and introduce it as a new bill in 2027? Because this is the second year of the legislative session. So it may
Gotcha.
be dead for this year, but it's not officially dead as far as I know.
Gotcha. I had written down, I guess it was from maybe your newsletter, under current law, dues can increase by more than 20% each year. The new proposed legislation cap it at 8%. So if it doesn't pass, it will still be 20%. Nationwide, 67% of all new single family homes in 2024 were in HOAs, up from 46% in 2009. More than a third of California residents live in one, including about 65% of all California homeowners. Californians pay among the highest median monthly fees in the nation at nearly $300 per month. Well, that's a find an association in Santa Barbara that's $300 a month. That's funny. And of course,
Well,
down here.
and in fairness, Mark, we also have the most expensive residential real estate in most of the country too.
Right. It seemed to be, yeah, that seems to be a specious argument to point that out. Okay, good. You know what? Oh, last thing before we move on to another subject. I don't know if we spoke about this last time you were on, but about the rule about the balcony and the new law about retrofitting, rebuilding. So it made me think that you have a homeowners association, and maybe not everyone has a balcony, or maybe there's a special assessment that it's not going to benefit every homeowner. So maybe they get a little upset. Do situations, scenarios like that come up?
They do. They do. And I had something like that come up in a small association last month. We have a law that's been on the books now for about 5 years or so, Civil Code 5551, which requires condominium associations that have elevated exterior elements. We keep calling it balconies. It's not just balconies. It's balconies, walkway bridges, stairways, or other protrusions that stick out from the main building structure that are supported by wood. The law requires that with a deadline of 2026, I'm sorry, 2020, 2025, I think actually, that they have to be inspected once every 9 years if the HOA has responsibility for that particular item. There are some smaller associations, for example, that are townhouse style structures where the HOA doesn't have the responsibility to take care of the balcony, the individual homeowner does. Well, then that wouldn't fall under 5551. But we're seeing a lot of misunderstanding and, frankly, a couple of urban legends about this law. One of the most prevalent urban legends that even many lawyers mistake is they confuse the HOA balcony inspection or the elevated exterior element inspection law with the commercial or apartment elevated exterior element law, which is a completely different part of the civil code. And that there was a legislative extension of the commercial or apartment deadline by 1 year. And so a lot of people in the HOA world thought that, oh, our deadline was extended too. But the change in the law specifically said, the bill specifically said that common interest developments, aka HOAs, were excluded. So the other myth is that every single balcony or patio above ground needs to be inspected. And that's just not true. The law is very clear that what they're worried about, what the law applies to, are basically, to make it simpler, is wood supported protrusions from the main building structure. So that means that if you have a building like a client of mine in South San Francisco, that the balconies are all actually indented into the building. They don't jut out from the main building structure. Their entire building of over 100 condominiums doesn't fall under Civil Code 5551.
I remember
So,
that story. You actually threatened to sue somebody, and they backed off.
well, we had the building department in South San Francisco wrote a letter demanding that the HOA comply with the law. And I said, "You got to explain to me how, sir." And of course, they didn't respond. I think the last problem we're having with that statewide, as far as I'm seeing, is that we have contractors and, well, engineers and architects, because the must be a civil or a structural engineer or an architect for HOAs that does this inspection. They're over inspecting. A lot of the design professionals that are doing these inspections aren't closely looking at what the statute says is supposed to fall under the inspection requirement. And so they're over inspecting these buildings. And so I'm seeing HOAs spend a lot of extra money for inspecting things that aren't specifically covered by the statute because they don't, for example, jut out from the building, or they're not supported just by wood. Maybe there's steel framework involved. So
You mean to say that they are actually paying to remediate issues that aren't required?
correct.
Okay. Hey, my guest Kelly Richardson, out of Pasadena, law firm of Richardson Ober. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. Great recap. We've got a couple of more topics, so we'll take a commercial break. We'll come back. There's another HOA rule. And I got a lawsuit against the condo association that we want to talk about. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.